Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
An end to OSHA? Well, that's what one lawmaker in Arizona is proposing. We'll give you all the details. Today on the show, we check in with Senator Sherrod Brown, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades, and it's our first Friday with Fred. Fred Redmond of the AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Friday, May 5th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We got a jam-packed show planned for you today. We got three guests. We're going to start things off momentarily, expecting a call from Washington with Senator Sherrod Brown. And he this week sent a letter to the CEO of Norfolk Southern urging him to maintain its properties in Cleveland. And this has all come to a head ever since that train derailment 3 months ago in East Palestine, Ohio. And most recently, a number of people have sent pictures of these railroad crossings and the overpasses where chunks of concrete are falling from those overpasses onto vehicles. And from what I understand, the railroad industry is just putting up pieces of plywood so the chunks will hit the plywood and not the cars below. Amazing what's going on. And this is a very profitable industry. And there's some legislation that would definitely tighten up things with the railroad industry and also protect workers that are in the rail industry. The other issue is solar. And this week, Senator Brown voted in favor of congressional action to overturn the Biden administration's suspension of tariffs on Chinese solar product importers. Very big issue here. Apparently, the White House wanted to release those tariffs, and Senator Brown said, no, they're still cheating. Dorsey Hager will be joining us as our second guest on behalf of the Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. He's got a lot of things going on in Central Ohio, including the announcement this week that Google is going to construct two more buildings in Central Ohio. A building boom going on there, without a doubt, and they need a lot of workers. He'll address that. We'll talk about the recent legislative conference for the North American building trades, and good news, too, because Building Futures and the Columbus Building Trades received an award at that conference. We'll talk about that and get an update, political update, on House Joint Resolution 1 and its companion legislation in the Senate. And this is the issue we've been talking about on the show for the past couple of weeks, and this is the amendment. It's a proposed amendment that would require future state constitutional amendments get 60% support instead of 50% plus one. And lastly, we have Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, and he's going to give us an update on Julie Sue's nomination to be our next labor secretary. I knew this was going to be a fight. And also, the death on the job report. We're going to talk about the importance of OSHA. And Fred knows this all too well. Fred spent his entire life with the steelworkers, almost 50 years working with the steelworkers. And they've seen a lot with regard to job safety and the lack of job safety. So we'll address that. Especially, we're going to talk about one lawmaker, I'll get to this in a minute, who wants to eliminate OSHA. That's right. He wants to eliminate OSHA. So Fred Redmond, our third guest right here on America's Workforce. And now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. I want to talk a little bit about OSHA here, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. This is legislation that was signed into law by Republican President Richard Nixon back on December 29th, 1970. And that year, 38 workers were killed on the job. And that was pretty much the average, 38 workers killed on the job every year. And fast forward to today, that number has dropped to 14. And I have to point out, the workforce in America is more than twice as large. So that's a pretty significant drop. We're looking at least a 60% drop in worker deaths. Enter Andy Biggs. Andy Biggs is a member of the Freedom Caucus, and he's a hard right Republican out of Arizona, and he has proposed this week that OSHA be eliminated. I'm not kidding you. And this is what he wrote. Notwithstanding any other provision of law, amounts authorized or otherwise made available to the Department of Labor, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, fiscal year 2024, their budget shall not exceed $0. Yeah, he wants to trim the budget, like many Republicans, and he figures, why do we need OSHA? Corporations can handle safety. This is what he wrote. OSHA's existence is yet another example of the federal government creating agencies to address issues that are more appropriately handled by state governments and private employers. Arizona and every other state has the constitutional right to establish and implement their own health and safety measures and is more than capable of doing so. It's time we fight back against the bloated federal government and eliminate agencies that never should have been established in the first place. I will not let OSHA push Arizona around with their bureaucratic regulations and urge my colleagues to support my effort to eliminate this unconstitutional federal agency. This guy, by the way, is the former governor of Arizona. Oh, my God. These are the people we have to deal with in Washington. All right. We have a call coming in from Washington. Let's go to line number three right now. Senator Sherrod Brown joining us from Washington. Now, as you know, one of the big issues is rail safety. And now it's the bridges, the lack of maintenance on bridges that the railroads use. And a number of people are speaking out. Senator Brown, welcome back to the show. Hey, what's going on here? What's the responsibility of the industry when it comes to those bridges? Because I know those bridges are pretty old.
Yeah, when East Palestine happened, I thought a lot about this, and that railroads have been one of the most powerful interest groups in this country for 100 years. And one of the reasons they're so powerful is nobody thinks about them until, you know, and so obviously what happened in East Palestine makes us understand we've got to do this Brown-Vance railroad safety bill. But we also know what they do to local communities. They have the tracks going over bridges that are old. They own these bridges. And as you know, in Lake Avenue, one of those bridges, the stone and the brick and the steel have in some cases fallen on the street below. They're owned by Norfolk Southern. But when council people like Jenny Spencer and the mayor and others tell Norfolk Southern to fix it, they don't care, because they don't have any power to do anything. So I'm meeting later today with the CEO of Norfolk Southern. He's not my friend. He doesn't see me as his friend, because I've been going after that railroad for all kinds of things, including how they treat local governments. In some communities in the state, the communities have had to build a second fire station on the other side of the tracks because these now 150, 200 car trains will stop for a half an hour, an hour, a half a day longer. And if there's a fire and there's no fire station on that side of the tracks, people lose their homes. We've seen them ignore local officials when they say, keep up your property in our community. And we're going to shine a light on them, put the pressure on them. I'm going to talk to the CEO about this and demand that they deal with this in all size communities in Ohio. Cleveland's just the one that's sort of best known now, the Lake Avenue tracks, that little bridge. But there are plenty of them around the state, and they've got to take care of their property.
And their way of fixing them, they put some plywood under the bridges so the chunks of concrete can fall onto the plywood instead of the vehicle that's driving under it. That's their method of operation.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, it's pretty incredible. But think about this, that this railroad in the last 10 years, and Norfolk Southern is just a little worse than the others, but there are only two big railroads east of Mississippi, CSX and Norfolk Southern. And there are, I think, two or three west of Mississippi. And the Norfolk Southern laid off one third. And I know this show is always looking out for working people, Flash. You've done for more than two decades now. But this railroad laid off a third of its workers. And when you lay off a third of its workers, you compromise safety. There aren't the track inspection. There's not the wheel bearing replacement on these trains. They're not keeping up their property. The public gets hurt. The public, look at East Palestine, look at this bridge, what it could do. But you know what? They their quarterly earnings report on Wall Street keeps going up when they lay people off, because that's what Wall Street, that's when Wall Street rewards stock prices. And then you know what happens? Then the executives, Alan Shaw and the other executives, do these big stock buybacks. So they may only make $8 or $9 million a year, or even $2 or $3 million a year, but then the stock buybacks create even greater riches for these executives. So they were going to do a second stock buyback when East Palestine happened. So they backed off that, but they've laid off people, and it's compromised public safety. And we're going to keep pushing them to do the right thing here and to invest in workers and invest in communities.
I'm glad you brought that up, because we had Greg Regan on the show not too long ago talking about that very issue, and they started a campaign. It's the website nostockbuybacks.org, nostockbuybacks.org. And from what I understand, it's been getting a lot of hits. Let's move on to...
Well, it's been getting a lot of attention. One more thing, Flash. It's getting a lot of attention. And we've gotten the Securities Exchange Commission to tighten the rules on these people that are doing that.
Oh, good.
So, I mean, we see that, you know, the executives are getting richer and richer in this country. They abandon neighborhoods. They abandon communities like my hometown of Mansfield and places like Barberton and places like Maple Heights. Connie and I live in Cleveland, but right on the edge of Maple Heights. We see what they've done to these communities with laying off, shutting plants, laying off workers, going to China, going to Mexico, and they continue to reward themselves, and wages for workers have been stagnant for a generation as a result. And you and I've talked about what these trade agreements did. It's that, and then it's more, and that's what we've got to tighten the screws on them.
All right, you mentioned China. I know we're short on time, but right now, one of the big issues in Washington is that, well, the Biden administration wanted to suspend tariffs on Chinese solar product importers. But you went against that. Can you fill us in? Where do we stand with this? And maybe you can give us some more details.
Well, it's the same old song. It's the same old song that, I mean, this administration's been better on trade and labor than the last few. But administration after administration, they compromise on far too often on tariffs and far too often standing up to China. And I've taken on presidents of both parties. I don't care their party in these issues. I've taken on Biden and Trump and Bush and Clinton and Obama. And they've got to do the right thing on this. We had a victory yesterday on these solar tariffs, bipartisan vote. Biden's going to likely veto it. I like the president personally. I think he's been good for workers and good for labor, but he's wrong on this one. And we will continue one of my first and proudest votes in Congress was against the North American Free Trade Agreement. And we've gotten better, but we aren't good enough yet.
Workers first. That's what it's all about. Senator, thank you so much. Keep up the fight. Okay, brother.
Thanks, Flash, for sure. Thanks, buddy.
Always appreciate his commentary. Senator Sherrod Brown from Washington. All right, a quick break. When we come back, Dorsey Hager on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You could find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to Central Ohio and welcome one of our longtime supporters, and that is Dorsey Hager on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, where he serves as Executive Secretary Treasurer, columbusconstruction.org. And the Twitter handle is so appropriate. It's BuildCentralOH, BuildCentralOH. And every time I talk to Dorsey, something new is happening. We talk about the Intel plant, and we'll get a progress report on that. But I heard Dorsey in the news. What is this? Not one, but two more facilities for Google in your area? What the heck is going on down there, Dorsey?
It just seems like Columbus and Central Ohio seems to be the place to be right now. It's definitely becoming, you know, I almost said tech center of Ohio, but actually tech center of the United States, and maybe even competing to be the tech center of the world. You know, we already have Amazon. We already have Facebook. Now Google is here. They've almost completely built out their new Albany campus, and now they're adding two new campuses, one in Lancaster, which is just southeast of Columbus, and one on the south side of Columbus. So there's 13 Google campuses around the world, and three of them are going to be here in Columbus and Central Ohio. And anybody who knows anything about tech, whether it's Intel, Facebook, Google, Amazon, you know, this is a rarity to have more than one in one region or one area because of the risk adverse, you know, to weather, to very, you know, bad weather like hurricanes, monsoons, earthquakes, anything like that. But one of the big draws to Columbus, and I know we've joked about this on your show before, when I meet with folks that are looking to come to Columbus, is to love our weather. And I'm like, really? Like, you know, I've lived here most of my life, and I'm not a fan of our weather. And they're like, no, you guys have great weather. Not real hot. It's not real cold. You don't have tornadoes. You don't have blizzards. You don't have monsoons. You don't have hurricanes. You don't have earthquakes. You know, so the folks just love our weather, the weather and the water, the two W's, that's what they love. And, Google had a great announcement the other day at the Ohio Chamber. I got to see my good friend, former Congressman Steve Stivers, who was there and held the event. Of course, Governor DeWine and Lieutenant Governor Houston, Congressman Balderson, and Congressman Kerry were there as well, because each one of those is in each one of their districts. But it's a great announcement. A good morning. You know, talking about another $2 billion+ worth of work. So it's going to be a lot of work for, you know, insulators, sheet metal workers, electricians, laborers, iron workers, plumbers, and pipe fitters. So keep gearing up, keep expanding pre-apprenticeship and apprenticeship, keep giving opportunities to those who didn't know that they existed, and keep reaching out to middle schools and high schools. And it looks like we're going to ride this wave for a while, and that's what we're looking forward to.
That's amazing. And you and I have had many conversations, because the Intel plant's going to take a whole lot of workers. And now you throw this on top of it. My gosh, it's amazing. Do we have any kind of timetable on these Google plants that we're talking about?
Yeah, so they're doing some, I would say, maybe pre-construction right now, a little bit of earthwork, a little bit of site, you know, stuff like that, and a little bit of vertical stuff coming up. But it's really going to hit, I would say, probably at the end of the year, where they'll really start going gangbusters. And I would say probably the next 18 to 36 months is going to be the height of both the projects. And, I mean, it's you know, we talk about this all the time. It's construction, so it's hard to tell. You know, you can't say there's going to be 112 people on Monday and 273 people on Tuesday and this and that. But I would expect the Lancaster campus and the Columbus campus to have, you know, probably between 12 to 1500 people at the height. So you're looking at 3000 people, you know, in the next few months out there working on those sites.
Yeah, this is shaping up to be the new Silicon Valley, Central Ohio, without a doubt. And I'm sure the Intel plant, the decision to locate there, had something to do with Google expanding their presence in Central Ohio. Speaking of Intel, where are we with that project right now, Dorsey?
So we meet monthly with Bechtel. We have great conversations. I saw Sam Lyon in D.C. last week at the legislative conference, and we got folks out there working on underground. They're building their two batch plant. Looks like the phase one, the two fabs, the two batch plants are going to produce 460,000 square yards of concrete that are going to be poured and put into the two fabs, the first batch plant out there. So, you know, we got laborers out there. We got Teamsters. We got, you know, iron workers. We got electricians, pipe fitters working on underground. We got cement masons getting ready to pour and finish concrete. So we're hyping up out there. It looks like things are on schedule, and we're going to be gearing up out there. So I'm excited about it. I'm was out there a couple of days ago, and it seems like every 30 to 45 days when I go out there, the site, you know, takes a different shape and looks different. And obviously it's a massive site. It's over 800 acres, but it's really cool to go out there and check it out. And it's going good. So we're excited about it.
Well, all this has garnered the attention of the North American building trade. Sean McGarvey paid a visit to the area a couple of weeks ago. I'm sure he got pretty excited to see what's going on. And obviously, they had the legislative conference after his visit. Can you speak to that? How was that conference this time around?
So we were kind of joking about it yesterday at lunch. And in my last evening when I was in D.C., I spent the evening with some staffers from the Hill. One was the finance manager for the DNC for the state of Maryland. Another young man was a staffer for Congresswoman Sykes and a couple other folks. And some of those folks out there in D.C., you know, that just amazes me that the job and the effort and the work, and our people are the same way out there. You know, D.C. is kind of a different animal. It's an 18 to 20 hour workday, 5 to 6 days a week. You know, you get up, you have a meeting in the morning, go to the office, you put your 10, 11 hours in, you usually have an event right after work, and then, you know, you might have a late dinner with somebody. As a matter of fact, one of the staffers at an event that we had to wrap up the week, we had a congressional mixer at the Barrel, and Kelly Harrop and Mike Nisley from the State Building Trades did a great job putting that together, but one of the staffers was there, and it was like 8:30, 9 o'clock, and, you know, I was taking an Uber, and he's like, "Do you mind if I, you know, hitch the Uber with you?" And I said, "No." I said, "Did you live up towards the hotel?" And he's like, "No." He's like, "I'm having dinner with a congressperson tonight at 10 o'clock. And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, what a long day." But that's the norm there. But we had a great legislative conference. We heard from some great speakers. Chuck Schumer spoke. Obviously, the head of the NHLPA, the former labor secretary, Marty Walsh, spoke. We got to hang out with him at the hotel the day before he spoke. And he was great, you know, coming around, talking to us about issues that were going on. So that was awesome, but he gave a great speech. And then the highlight of the week, and, you know, be a little selfish here, but Building Futures and the Columbus Building Trades received the Mark Ayers Community Award for all the work that we're doing for our pre-apprenticeship program, Building Futures, here in Columbus and Central Ohio. They played a nice little 3 to 4 minute video. You can see that on our YouTube channel. You can see that on our social media, Facebook and Twitter at Build Central OH, or on our website at columbusconstruction.org. But then we got pictures, got to get the award, and then, you know, afterwards we were backstage, we were leaving the stage, and Senator Raphael Warnock had just spoke, and he was kind of hanging out waiting, and we got to talk to him and discuss pre-apprenticeship, everything we're doing for people of color and women and vets in Central Ohio and Columbus, the work, and he was kind enough to take a picture with us, and it's just a great time. It was a good week. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work. You know, we had the congressional breakfast at State Building Trades through, and we got to hear from Senator Sherrod Brown. Got to hear from Senator J.D. Vance, which was good, and a lot of it was, you know, based on infrastructure and workforce development, and which is right in our wheelhouse, especially here in Columbus and Central Ohio, and it's everything that we're trying to do and everything we're trying to keep the momentum going to continue to create opportunities for our members.
That's awesome. That's awesome that you're getting that recognition, because I know you put a whole lot of work into Building Futures. You know, while we're talking about this, can we get an update on those community benefit agreements? We did a show on this a couple of months ago when we conferenced with the NAACP, and can maybe a progress report right now, because I know there's a great future there in that program.
Oh, yeah. So President Nana Watson from the NAACP, she sits on the CBA board along with Jeff Hunley, who's one of our business agents from the Sheet Metal Workers. And they've really been working hard on this. And they've crafted a boilerplate agreement to be used by the city on different community benefit agreements. So it looks like this one is getting ready to be signed for the Fran Ryan Center. And this is a recreation center in the city of Columbus named after longtime city councilwoman Fran Ryan. It's about a $31 million job, which isn't a big job, but it's a nice job. And very similar to the Linden Rec Center that we did a couple of years ago under a CBA. But they're also talking about an aquatic center, which is about a $50 to $55 million job. And then, obviously, the municipal courthouse, which is about $275 million, which will consolidate a lot of offices and courthouses down in Columbus. And I know the mayor is very excited about that project. And, you know, it's a re-election year for him, so he's laser-focused on that. But he's also running the day-to-day of the city. And he's very excited about what we can do with a $275 million job in terms of outreach, expansion of Building Futures and our pre-apprenticeship program, and getting more folks on that project, giving them an opportunity to see what they can do in the construction and the building trades to provide for themselves. So that's where we're at on those. We hope to have an announcement on Fran Ryan any day, and I would say in the next couple of months, once they pick a general contractor for the municipal courthouse, there'll be more on that too. But you look at that, I just said this in a meeting the other evening, so there's about $360 million that we're going to have under a community benefit agreement, which is a form of a PLA. And then, you know, you factor in Honda, $4.5 billion. You factor in Intel, $20 billion. So you're looking at about $26 billion here in Columbus and Central Ohio in the next, well, Honda, Intel's going on right now and will be going on for a while. But I would say from now and for the next 5 years. So, you know, it's about $26 billion covered under project labor agreements, where we're going to need probably about 12,000 to 14,000 building tradespeople to do this work. So it's exciting times here in Columbus and Central Ohio, and you can't forget about all the ancillary stuff either. The wastewater treatment plants and LSU Medical Center, the OSU ice rink, the Children's Medical Center that's getting ready to come out of the ground, and all the other work that we're doing. And we haven't even talked about solar. We haven't even talked about infrastructure. We haven't even talked about the Intel suppliers. We haven't even talked about the Honda suppliers yet. So the work outlook here in Columbus Central Ohio is great, and we're excited about the opportunities.
Just amazing. Just amazing. Dorsey Hager joining us on our live line, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. More to come. We're going to get into the politics here, because that's another issue in Central Ohio. Later in the show, it's our first Friday with Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-Union.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings. And if you like a show, please share that show. We count all the downloads. Our sponsors like to know how we are growing in 2023. And yes, we are growing. AWFpodcast.com. So if you miss something or you like something, just send it to AWFpodcast.com. By the way, this next portion of the show, sponsored by iMed, switching to managed vision care may save your fun money and deliver a better experience. That's what you want, right? Go to imed.com/union and you'll learn a whole lot more. All right, let's go back to our live line, rejoin Dorsey Hager on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, Build Central OH. You can follow them on Twitter. Well, you've got a crazy situation with the political game going on down there with House Joint Resolution 1 and then its companion bill in the Senate. And Dorsey, I'd like to get your take. It seems, and I might be wrong on this, that the GOP supermajority might be getting the message here. I saw a story the other day that they delayed taking action on that legislation, which would require future state constitutional amendments to get 60% support from voters to pass. Now, this is something that's been the law in the state of Ohio since, 1912? And they want to change it, which would be tough on voters if they want to get an amendment on the ballot. So what's your point of view? You're in the middle of all this right now. What are you hearing?
So here's my point of view, and it's pretty cut and dry, and it's really simple. And I know when it comes to changing legislation, people want to throw a bunch of minutia in and look at a bunch of different angles, and this is basically it. The Republicans who have control of the House and the Senate, overwhelming control, supermajorities, are fearful of being a reduplication of Kansas. And if you remember last year, Kansas did a petition drive to codify women's reproductive health rights, and it passed in a very red conservative state.
Right.
So the Republicans here, even though a few months ago they said that, hey, August elections are no good, turnout is low, we're not going to have these anymore, have changed their mind because there's a group of folks that are circulating petitions to get on the ballot in November to codify, again, women's reproductive rights like they did in Kansas. So the legislature is trying to jump the gun, trying to get in front of them, and trying to make it that you would have to have 60% to make any constitutional amendments. So somebody looking from the outside might say, well, okay, this seems more like a social issue. Why is the AFL-CIO getting involved? Why is the Columbus Building Trades getting involved? Why have the IBEW? Why have the UA? Why have the insulators? Why have the ironworkers signed on against this? Very fundamental reason, and this is what I've said in my 3 days of testimony. We obviously are big proponents of a democracy where everybody has equal voice and equal opportunity. The fundamental is this: one person, one vote. This would obviously go against it. And then our second fear, a couple other fears that kind of come into this, is this is going to affect bonding as well. So I said this in my testimony a couple of years ago. Mayor Ginther, seeing all this work coming, knew that there were things that we had to do for the city of Columbus for infrastructure, roads, bridges, improving city services, water treatment plants, which there's a new water treatment plant going up in northeast side of Columbus. It's going to help all the tech and data work out in New Albany. So we worked our butts off. We endorsed and we supported that bond issue, and it passed by 54%. If this were to go into effect, you would need 60% to pass any bonding issues. So that would not have happened, and that would obviously jeopardize a lot of work opportunities for our members here in Columbus and Central Ohio. And, you know, that's why we've came out opposed to this. That's why we're against it. And a little bit of a history lesson that I shared, and Mike Curtin shared this the other day as well, who, you know, is a dispatch editor for 34 years and also a former state rep, is that, you know, in 2001, we overturned Senate Bill 5 with 61% of the vote. We would have barely overturned that if this amendment would have passed. And we spent organized labor, spent $50 million on that to get that overturned. So it's like I've told some friends of mine in the state legislature, there's three things that we're laser focused on right now. It's marketing and outreach, it's workforce development, and it's also politics. Those are the three things that we lend our support from. So obviously we're not going to take away from our budget for marketing and outreach because we got to keep on doing what we're doing to bring these jobs to Columbus and Central Ohio. We're not going to take away from workforce development because we're constantly trying to increase our apprenticeship and our pre-apprenticeship ranks. So where that money is going to come from to fight this harmful legislation is going to come from politics. So, you know, hopefully this thing stays in committee and doesn't come out. Hopefully it doesn't come out on the House floor. And hopefully this doesn't become a part of what we're going to be doing here in the future.
I'm glad you share that perspective, because now you put a business tint on this. This could affect future development if it goes down that way. Now, I'm reading into this, as I mentioned at the beginning of this segment, that they delayed taking action. Do you think that they're getting the message that this probably isn't the right way to go right now?
I think several folks are getting the message. Here's the thing that I see it now, though. And again, I'm not down at the State House every day. That's not me, but this is an outsider saying this. The way that I'm looking at it now is I think there's a lot of folks that are right-to-life folks in the Republican caucus that are fearful of getting primaried if they vote against this by people or a slate from Americans for Prosperity that they'll put up, because they're the ones that are behind this. They're the ones that are bankrolling this with a billionaire from Illinois who's tried to do this in other states. So while I don't agree, I can see that. But a lot of those folks who said that they will vote for this are saying that they are going to vote against funding a special election because they do not believe in an August special election, because they don't like the idea of taking $20 to $25 million in taxpayer dollars just to have an election just on this, where the turnout again is going to be 5 or 6%.
And these are the same people that said no more August elections a couple
absolutely.
Of months ago.
Just a few months ago. You're absolutely right.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, a lot of money. So what they might do here is kick the can down the road, do it in a future election. I know the issue is not just going to die off like that. If it does, I know the debt isn't the deadline next Wednesday. They have to get in if they want to get it on the August ballot. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's my understanding. Secretary of State Frank LaRose said in order to be able to get it on the August election, they had to have something out of the legislature by May 10th. So next Wednesday is a drop dead day, and we'll see what happens. So we're constantly monitoring. We're closely monitoring it. And, you know, we have to do what we can down at the State House again to stop this, because, you know, then any attacks that come out of the legislature in the future, either right to work or prevailing wage, would be very, very difficult and costly to overturn. So we're going to try to do what we can to make sure we put a stop to this.
There you go. All right. Again, thank you for your perspective on this issue, because this is getting a whole lot of media attention, not just in Ohio, but around the country. Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, columbusconstruction.org. Do follow them on Twitter at BuildCentralOH, and that's where that video is posted for the Mark Ayers Community Award, which was played at the NAMTU Legislative Conference just a couple of weeks ago. Dorsey, you take care. Keep up the fight, brother. We'll talk to you next month, all right?
All right. Thank you, Flash. Have a great weekend and have a great Friday.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Coming up next, it's Fred Redman, our first Friday with Fred of the AFL-CIO. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWaterson.com.
Hi, this is Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce Radio and podcast.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Washington, D.C. It's not too often that Fred Redmond is in one place very long. And obviously, the AFL-CIO is located in Washington, D.C. And Fred, of course, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. It's our first Friday with Fred. Lots to talk about. Fred Redmond, are you getting any rest here? They're really taking you all over the country here. There's a lot of things going on, good things, bad things. But are you staying in one place for at least the next day or so, or what?
Well, I've been to D.C. all week. I'm going to go back to Pittsburgh for the weekend, and then back in D.C. next week. There's a lot of happening, like you said, some good, some bad, but we're out there swinging away.
Yeah, there's a lot that we have to discuss. Let's plow into Julie Sue's nomination as Labor Secretary. I see this all over your homepage, AFLCIO.org. I knew that this was going to be a fight. I think part of it has to do with the fact that she comes from California, and they don't like the liberals in California. You know how that is. So what's your take on this? You think there's a couple of Democrats we got to convince to get her over the hump, right?
Yeah, there's a couple of Democrats who are a little hesitant to support Julie Sue, and we don't know the reasons for that because she's been a fighter. She's been a fighter for working families. Her and Marty Walsh did more for working people. You know, we've had the Department of Labor under Marty's leadership with Julie working, with Marty hand in hand throughout his tenure as head of the Department of Labor. And look, they've been a strong, solid voice for working people. And Julie Sue is committed. I mean, she's a fighter. She's a person who come from a working family background. She believes in the rights of workers. And we got all our push. The AFL-CIO's campaign is, stand with Julie. And we got local unions and international unions around this country writing their congresspeople, writing their senators, letting them know by all means we want Julie Sue. And Julie Sue would be the best advocate for working people that the Department of Labor could have at this time. And, we're going to make sure that she get confirmed by the Senate.
When is the vote coming up, Fred?
They postponed it once. They postponed the vote. We expect it to hit the docket sometime this month in May. We haven't got a date yet, but we expect it to be coming up soon. That's why the push by the AFL-CIO and our affiliate unions is really picking up steam. And, we're going to make sure she get across the finish line. And the reason why, Flash, is because workers need that protection. They need the protection of OSHA. They need the protection of workplace safety regulations throughout this country. And we know with Julie Sue at the helm is that workers are going to be in good hands. And the DOL is going to work like it was designed to work on behalf of workers, not corporations.
That's right. OSHA is under the Labor Department, and we definitely need that leadership to continue. She's doing a good job now as acting, but we got to confirm her. Speaking of OSHA, and I want to talk to you a little bit about what's going on, because I had a story earlier on in the show about one individual out of Arizona, Andy Biggs, a hardcore Republican, and he's a member of the Freedom Caucus. And know about this this debate over the debt ceiling, and the Republicans are saying, well, we got to cut. And one of the things that Andy Biggs wants to do is pretty much eliminate OSHA. He came right out and said that for fiscal 2024, their budget shall not exceed $0. Now, Fred, you know, this is pretty OSHA has had a tremendous effect on American workers. I did some homework on this, and when OSHA was created, we're going back to 1970, and Richard Nixon, a Republican, signed it into law. Now, in 1970, 38 workers were killed on the job every day. Now, it's 14, but I have to add something. The workforce more than doubled since 1970, more than doubled, and we went from 38 to 14. Now, that's still, and we still got some way to go, but come on now, to eliminate OSHA. Fred, I don't know how you handle this kind of stuff.
Well, you know, this is the kind of stuff that the Marjorie Taylor Greens, you know, this is the type of stuff that they advocate with no concern about the workers, people who go to work and lift this country up and do the job every day. But it's a vital agency of the federal government. They had not gotten a increase in their budget until last December, though in the last session of Congress, we were able to fight for some increases in their budget because, you know, OSHA has been strapped. You know, they've been behind, investigations is behind, and we was finally able to get them an increase. It wasn't what we was looking for, but with that increase, they was able to really speed up the pace of their investigations, their safety and health complaints. And what Andy Biggs said is an affront to every American worker in this country. You know, could you imagine having a workplace without OSHA, you know, to regulate and to enforce safety requirements on the job? I mean, these people have no conscience. I mean, to talk about not funding OSHA is a travesty and an insult to workers, you know, throughout this country, and not just workers who work in factories and work in mills, but workers that work in offices and everywhere around the country are under the auspices of OSHA in terms of safety regulations, you know, in terms of, you know, all sort of hazards that exist on the job. And it's unfathomable that a guy like Andy Biggs will advocate cutting OSHA. So these are the challenges that we have. I mean, this is a different group that we're seeing in Congress today, these MAGA Republicans. And to attack workers, and that's what that is, that's an attack against workers, even advocate for cutting the budget of OSHA is just something that we cannot allow in this country. And, you know, workers are not going to take that sort of draconian cuts in order to balance a budget. When they gave the 45th president, they gave him a clear path with no restriction in terms of stabilizing the budget. And, you know, given they gave the previous president a clean path to increase the budget, without concern for any of the budget deficits, but the cut programs like OSHA is an indication of the type of challenges that we have within this Congress with these MAGA Republicans.
Yeah, he doesn't want to stop there. He wants to eliminate the Department of Education along with Health and Human Services, also eliminate any student financial aid, the student loan forgiveness program. It's never ending. But, you know, I got to congratulate your staff over there at the AFL-CIO on the death on the job report. We did a lot on this on the show, Fred, the toll of neglect, where we found out that 343 workers die every day from hazardous working conditions. And I didn't even realize that public sector employees do not have OSHA coverage. And there's 8 million in that regard. Now, Fred, if you don't mind, I mean, you spent your entire career with the steelworkers. You have seen over that time a lot when it comes to the fact that workplaces were not safe. In fact, you started at the steelworkers. I don't want to reflect on your age here, but it was just a couple of years after OSHA began in 1970. That's right. But maybe you could share some of the things. And the steelworkers, boy, I got to salute them. Another great sponsor of the show. They have done unbelievable work to make sure that their workers come home at the end of the day. Can you speak to that for a few minutes, Fred?
Well, the steelworkers represent workers, and I'm proud to say in every aspect of industrial manufacturing, in this country. You know, everything except building, you know, assembly and all those. The steelworkers is really an auto union. You know, they represent the entire auto supply chain. We have 250,000 members in the United States and Canada that makes a part that's going to wind up in a car. The steel workers make the steel, the aluminum, the glass, the rubber, you know, that goes into a automobile. So, you know, our union have a long history of fighting to make sure that the jobs are safe within the supply chain. Our former president, George Becker, he actually wrote the clean lead standard. And it was the steelworkers who advocated the clean lead standard and got it through OSHA and got it as a regulation. They're saving lives today. But throughout my career, I have seen, you know, so many fatalities and serious injuries that take place in plants because of unsafe working conditions. And, you know, the steelworkers were responsible for the lockout, tagout procedure that's enforced by OSHA today. Whereas if you're working on a machine, if a machine is malfunctioning, you lock it out where it cannot, you know, take it out of operation. The steelworkers were responsible for passing that regulation. So, you know, there's nothing worse for a union official than to hear about a industrial death or an industrial hazard on the job where people have been affected. Because workers go to work every day. And they, you know, go to work to support their families, to be good citizens, pay their taxes. And the only thing that organized labor want is for workers to come home after each shift, to come home and, you know, spend some time with their families and wake up the next day and go back into a safe workplace so they can come home again. So, you know, this has been a long struggle for the labor movement, but with the steel workers particularly, because we work in the most dangerous environments throughout this country. And, you know, the OSHA standards were not given to workers. They were fought for by the labor movement. And these standards have been proven. They have been tested. There's no question that because of OSHA standards, workers, you know, are able to work in a relatively safe environment, free from hazards. And even the thought of a person like Andy Biggs, you know, to even come up with the idea of not funding that agency, okay, is really insulting, you know, not just to American workers, but to any person that value life, that feel as though a person should not be killed, you know, by working on unsafe working conditions, by just trying to support their family. So look, the struggle continues. I mean, you know, this fight goes back to Mother Jones. It goes back to the old CIO with John L. Lewis, you know, but there's no bigger fight that the labor movement faced than safety and health on the job. So we're going to continue to do like Mother Jones said. We're going to pray for the dead and fight for the living. But this attack against OSHA is, you know, look, it's not acceptable. And fortunately, we got a president, the most pro-union president that we've seen in our lifetime, you know, who's going to continue to stand up for American workers, and we're going to stand with him. And the first commitment of organized labor is to make sure that workers have the safety protections that's needed for them to do their jobs in a safe environment.
Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, AFL-CIO.org. Do check out that Death on the Job report, The Toll of Neglect, and there's a lot of neglect that needs to be cleaned up. Okay, my brother, you take care. Keep up the fight. We'll do this again in a month, okay?
Okay, you take care. Thanks a lot, Flash, for everything you're doing.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, we're going to speak with two presidents. First, the president of the Postal Workers Union and the head of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Employees. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.